Women and Money with Sarah Pennells. Finance from a female perspective.
Well, it is indeed time for Women and Money, and as well as presenting on Share Radio, I also run a money website for women called savvywoman.co.uk. So I'm delighted that we get the chance every week to focus on finance from a female perspective. Now, as you may have heard in the news, figures released today show that the number of people having cosmetic procedures fell to just over 30,000 last year, and that was a reduction of almost 40%. But women still make up around 90% of those who choose to have plastic surgery. But it's thought that a rise in the number of non-surgical operations, things like fillers and laser treatments, are also contributing to the fall in plastic surgery. But what are your rights when you have a procedure done? How do you choose a good cosmetic surgeon? And what can you do if it all goes wrong? Well, that's what we're talking about today. Now, my guests in the studio are Dr. Uma Jayanathan, who's from Save Face. I'm also joined by Martin James, who's an independent financial expert. Welcome to both of you. Thank you very much indeed for coming into the studio. If I could start with you, Uma, just tell me first of all a bit about Save Face and also about what you do. What are the kind of procedures that you do and what's the kind of training that you've had?
Okay, so well, Save Face is a government approved independent voluntary register, and I'm just one of the aesthetic practitioners on that. I'm a dentist and a facial aesthetic practitioner in Fulham at Karma Dental Care. It's a wonderful little independent where I only do sort of facial and skincare procedures. And I also work at my dentist in Putney where I do NHS, private and facial aesthetics. When it comes to skincare and facial aesthetics, I will do medical grade peels, anti-wrinkle treatments, fillers. But the main thing about Save Face is it gives people an idea of who have got the best standards in the industry, and to get on that there's quite a lot of things we have to do to be on the register.
Okay, well, I think we'll talk about that in a wee bit more detail in just a moment, but that's very useful to know. Well, I'm also joined now on the phone by Nilesh Sujitra, who is from the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, and also by Judith Thomas Whittingham, who's head of clinical negligence at Stevenson's Solicitors. Welcome to the programme. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. Nilesh, if I could ask you first, what should someone contemplate if they are thinking of having cosmetic surgery, and what are the sort of basic things they need to think about in terms of choosing a surgeon?
Good morning. I think one of the most important things a patient should think about is, are they having the cosmetic surgery for the right reasons? Are they being forced into this by their partner or some other life event? And if that is something that is one of the main driving factors, then they should really think again. When it comes to thinking about who to choose, this is probably one of the most important credentials they should look into. First of all, we would recommend you choose someone who is a member of the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, who is a member and on the specialist register at the GMC, trained as a surgeon. But there are varying levels of people who are on the specialist register who have differing levels of experience, and particularly people who have been qualified outside Britain may have less training. The training scheme may be 1 or 2 years, as opposed to the British system, which is a minimum of 6 years of specialist registrar training on top of maybe 4 years.
How could somebody who's never had cosmetic surgery before make sure they find somebody who has been through the UK system and therefore has had the most in-depth training? What should they look for?
I mean, look to make sure they're a member of the British Association of Plastic Surgeons, of which there's 300-400 throughout the country. Make sure they have at least had a substantive consultant post in the past or present in the NHS, because to get an NHS consultant post has very stringent requirements. And contact and speak to patients, see testimonials, see patient photographs. Look to see if these photographs have been enhanced, because there's a lot of enhanced photographs around which may not actually be that surgeon's work.
So, I mean, it does sound, if you're somebody who's never had any of these procedures before, it does sound like there's quite a lot of your own work you have to do first to make sure that you are with a practitioner who actually is, you know, really knows what they're doing and has the necessary skills.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very difficult in this age where there's a lot of advertising, which we in essence are against, because this is a medical procedure, and often the young group of patients in this country between 18 and 30 are swayed by glossy magazines, nice clinics, and they don't think further than the surgeon's qualifications. They assume automatically that a surgeon is a surgeon until disaster strikes.
Just clear up one thing for us, because we're talking about cosmetic surgery, but I also mentioned sort of non-surgical procedures. So does a surgeon have to do these procedures, or can anybody do things like Botox or fillers? Because I think that sometimes confuses people.
Botox and fillers, there's less regulation off that market, and hence the British Association has in the last few years tried to tighten it by trying to introduce a register, which has not quite yet happened. But a lot of the people who are providing these procedures are people who cannot provide cosmetic surgery, and therefore this is their only remit. Sometimes it's done correctly, but in other cases it's more a case of, well, I can't offer something else, so I might as well offer this, even when it's inappropriate.
Is that, Uma, something that you see? I certainly see, you know, sort of wandering up and down the high street, there are lots of different sort of, you know, beauty salons and so on, and you're not always sure what qualifications somebody has.
It's a huge, huge industry. In the UK, it was estimated £30 billion was spent on cosmetic procedures, and 70% of that was on non-invasive. So you're talking about the anti-wrinkle injections, the fillers, the peels, and anyone can actually do these. The only legality is...
You mean I could? I mean, I could set myself up. I mean, I know it's...
There's nothing yet saying that people can't... Anyone could just pick up an injection and do that too. The only legality is when it comes to sort of anti-wrinkle products such as Azelaur, Botox, Dysport, there needs to be a prescription, because that is a prescription medication. You have a prescription from a prescriber, a dentist, doctor, a nurse practitioner. Then we can delegate to someone. The danger is there's a lot of people just getting it from wherever. So that's the danger. And also, these people aren't trained sufficiently. They may have gone on a training course, somebody's giving it to them, but they don't know the facial anatomy, vasculature, everything to do with the nerves. And it's a medical procedure. And that's how people need to think. They need to do, if you were going to look for somebody to do a frown line for you, or you want to have your lips just naturally enhanced, I would say go on something like Save Face, look yourself with a practitioner, look at reviews. I think we do that if we go to restaurants, so why wouldn't we do that for something like this? Then look at the practitioner and look at their qualifications, check on the GDC and GMC, that's our regulating bodies, make sure that actually on
the first one's the General Dentist Council.
General Dental Council, General Medical Council, nurses have that as well. And then look, go into the clinic, meet your clinician. You have to have some trust there. Make sure they're listening to you. Make sure they take a full consultation, medical history and photographs. For us, it's a medical record. For you, you know that they're looking at the detail of your face. We take it away, we can treatment plan. We give you the cost. It's really important that finance is discussed and be straightforward with how much this is going to cost. And then you have a cooling off period.
Martin, I mean, just talking about this, hearing how both Nilesh and Uma are talking about what you know, how you find a cosmetic surgeon or somebody who's going to do a non-invasive procedure. I mean, it sounds very complicated, and we've all seen, I think, you know, in the media, some of the results of when these procedures go wrong. Let's just start at the real basics. Do you have the same rights if you're buying a service such as, you know, a facelift or a filler, as if you're buying a TV or a holiday? Or is there something fundamentally different about getting something like this done?
Well, that's a really good question, Sarah. And I think those figures are astounding. I mean, 30 billion is a huge amount of money. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is it depends on how you pay. Buying things on credit gives you a certain amount of statutory protection, and it means that there are regulatory protections as well under the Financial Conduct Authority's rules. There are also the governing bodies as well, the two we mentioned, and many of the places that you can take a complaint. But let's not forget that a huge number of these procedures are done under the counter, so to speak, or even more terrifyingly, round in people's homes. You may have heard of Botox parties and everything else. Obviously, you and I have never been to those.
I must confess, the idea rather horrifies me, which And I haven't had Botox, so I can look horrified. But, you know, but I can't think of anything worse than basically having a whole load of people together and being encouraged to have, what I would regard as a cosmetic procedure. I know it may not be seen like that. But so just you were saying that you get different rights if you basically buy it on credit. And I've seen some of the health clinics offer their own finance. So is that something that you are generally going to be offered as a rule, that the health clinic may offer you in-house finance, as it were, or what seems like finance attached to the deal? Or can you just go off and do your own thing, pay by credit card or your savings if you have it?
Well, in theory, and again, it all depends on the kind of practitioners that you go to. Now, without casting aspersions, as Uma said, there's the big difference between sitting down and having a proper consultation and people talking about, whether you're actually really ready for this procedure and understanding what that means to you. And a sales-driven organisation, and let's remind everyone that anyone can hire a nice consultation room and put some lilies in it and then tell you and then give you a credit plan. It's just because people are being nice to you in a posh-looking room doesn't necessarily mean it's legit. And if people are pushing credit agreements on you, then you need to maybe stop and think about it. Warning signs are always, why do I need to buy this credit through you? How you fund an operation is entirely up to you. So you shouldn't have to do it through that particular company. You should never feel under pressure to sign up on the spot. And you should always look at the effectiveness of what it is that you're actually paying for. And again, when it comes to something as potentially life-changing as cosmetic surgery, in whatever form it comes, you should take the time to think about whether buying cheaper is better. I have seen bog-off deals for plastic surgery, I kid you not, which is worrying.
I've certainly seen sort of time-limited deals, so kind of 25% off if you buy now or buy in the next 48 hours, which I must confess makes me feel incredibly uneasy. I'd like to talk now to Judith Thomas-Whittingham, who's head of clinical negligence at the law firm Stevenson's. Welcome to the programme, Judith.
Good morning.
I'm guessing, you must deal with consumers when these things have gone wrong, when these procedures have gone wrong. Just tell us about some of the problems that you see when the surgery hasn't been done correctly, or when indeed the procedures, the fillers or whatever, have gone wrong.
Absolutely. It's very interesting to hear the other panellists as well, because a lot of what they're saying is exactly what we would say to clients if we were in the position of getting to them before they have to come to us. I deal with the clinical negligence aspects of it. So these are largely ones where they've had to undergo surgery. So the main part of the practice really is relating to breast augmentation surgery rather than fillers and Botox, etc. But no matter what it is, they still have to, the clinician who is providing the treatment still has to carry out that with a reasonable and responsible care. If they are in breach of that duty of care, then the patient has suffered some harm, then there may be recourse to compensation for them. It is a difficult thing in order to be able to prove there has been a breach of duty of care, often with these types of claims. And the reason being, many associations have very much tightened up their consent procedure and consent forms, and seem to try and exclude absolutely everything that possibly can be imaginable following surgery. It is excellent to have a good and thorough consent form, but that doesn't go against them having the proper consent discussion with the actual surgeon.
So you said they are ruling out. Just tell us in more detail what you mean by these consent forms, which presumably, from what you're saying, seem to be designed to minimise the chances of any legal action afterwards as much as getting informed consent. Is that what you're saying?
They're not designed to do what they are. They're not a substitute for that discussion. So occasionally they might be passed, and we've seen this before with clients, that they might have been passed a consent form, encouraged to hurriedly sign it, and then they think that the doctor thinks the consent procedure has been dealt with. That's incorrect. That should just be a supplement in order to either form the basis of the discussion or for the document for the patient to take away to reflect in the cooling off period. It shouldn't be an either or. It should certainly be a very thorough discussion so that the patient can convey exactly what their expectation of the outcome of the procedure is, because that's where often patients feel like they've been let down because they haven't got the result that they wanted. And that not necessarily is related to any negligence on behalf of the surgeon. It's just sometimes unexpected expectations of clients. But that needs to be a discussion prior to surgery taking place. And some less regulated or less concerned doctors may hurry through that consent procedure and simply ask the patient to sign a form and then seek to rely upon that form when they're faced with a claim for negligence against them.
Well, you're listening to Share Radio Morning and this is Women and Money. In a moment, I'll be finding out a bit more about how to pay for cosmetic surgery and whether you can claim against your credit card if there's a problem.
Share Radio.
Don't ignore the workplace. It's the law to have a work. Even if you work from home and only employ one person, you'll still need a work. You'll still need to offer a workplace pension. Ah, finally. I got your attention. Don't ignore the workplace pension. It's the law. Get to know your responsibilities with help from the pensions regulator. Visit workplacepensions.gov.uk.
Women and Money with Sarah Pennells. Finance from a female perspective.
This is the Women and Money Show, and we're talking about cosmetic procedures, how you're protected, and how to pay for them. On my expert panel are Dr. Uma Jayanathan, who's from Save Face, Judith Thomas-Whittingham, who's head of clinical negligence at Stevenson Solicitors, Nilesh Sajitra, who's from the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, and Martin James, who's an independent financial expert. Martin, Judith was mentioning earlier on just about this, how the consent procedure may be sort of rushed through. I'm guessing that rings some alarm bells with you, but you know, if you're somebody who's never had this, you may not realise what's actually happening.
Well, absolutely. So I think, as we often say in circumstances like this, it makes sense to kind of trust your gut instincts. And we talked a lot over the years about the importance of reading terms and conditions. I, for example, considered having laser eye surgery, and there are clauses in every single laser eye surgery contract I saw that would basically leave me unable to pursue a claim in theory. If there was any haloing, any permanent damage, any regression. And we understand why those clauses have to be in there for legal reasons. But as somebody who's going to go under the knife or whatever, it's important that you ask yourself, am I prepared to kind of necessarily not have any rights if this happens?
It's quite a sobering thought, I guess, when you actually see that in black and white, that although there may be understandable reasons for it's there, but actually in that situation, something could go wrong to that extent and you don't have that recourse. Nilesh, I'm guessing that you would echo what Judith was saying about, in fact, you sort of mentioned it earlier on, about not being rushed, about basically being talked through pros and cons and not being put under any pressure whatsoever to have any procedure?
Most definitely. All patients should be given a frank, informal discussion about all the pros, but particularly all the risks that could go wrong. And often I will see patients who will say, well, you're trying to scare me. And I'll say, no, I'm not trying to scare you. I'm trying to inform you of the small risk, should anything happen, that these are all possibilities. And then they may say, okay, you know, I want to book a procedure. And I'll say, no, what you need to do now is go and digest all this information and then maybe come back in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whenever you are comfortable and then book a procedure. Because this time, this cooling off period is absolutely essential that the patient has not been rushed into a medical decision rather than a financial decision on the part of various companies, which sometimes is the case. Where patients, you know, one of the presenters was talking about bog-off offers, where often patients are told, book your surgery by X date and we'll give you a discount, or book a friend in as well and we'll give you a further 10%, which is completely unacceptable.
I've seen both of those and I must confess that, you know, as I said, find those rather alarming. Uma, do you see many people who come to you after procedures have gone wrong, or do you hear about, I'm guessing because obviously you must talk to other practitioners, where things have gone wrong?
We see a huge amount, and it's mainly because of the untrained people, therapists, beauticians that are doing these procedures, but they think they have allowed, there isn't enough regulation. So what we do tend to see is a lot of treatments done at home, not in a clinical environment, and this is This is scary because I always work in a clinical environment. I don't feel confident without having my oxygen there, my medical emergency drugs. I couldn't work knowing that a patient could have an anaphylactic shock and my adrenaline isn't there. So I can't practice. I couldn't do it ever in someone's home, let alone cross-infection, cleanliness, where your products are kept. So that's the main thing I see, people having it done at home, and the consequences could be very bad. For instance, with a filler, if a filler occludes a vessel, you then could get necrosis of your skin. That's skin death. We have a formula in practice called Hyalase, which will dissolve the filler immediately. But you need to know the dilutions, you need to have it. And that would stop anything rightly bad happening to the face. If that's not in a Botox party at home, who's going to be able to stop that happening? And that's the dangerous thing. That's what we need to see. This is a procedure that should be done in a clinical environment, and it's just about educating.
And Judith, I appreciate that you see people who've had cosmetic surgery rather than non-cosmetic procedures go wrong. But from your perspective, are there gaps in the regulation of that, or is it more that there are rogues who are getting around the rules and kind of, you know, without being blasé, there will always be some rogues?
Yeah, I think there's certainly gaps in the legislation regarding that. And what's very difficult is for a patient to be swayed by the cheaper cost, maybe, or it might be more accessible to them to have it at a party or at somebody's home. And there isn't any consideration of the insurance position whatsoever. So in reputable beauty clinics, etc., they should have the insurance in place, but also not just general insurance in place to protect the public, but also insurance for the services that they are undertaking. And that's, again, something that can be quite misleading. So it might be a patient's asked, oh, are you insured? Are you insured? And they might point to a certificate on the wall, say, yeah, I'm insured. But are they insured for administering Botox? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. If they aren't insured, and certainly if you go to somebody's house and it's likely that they're not insured for it, and something does go wrong, then the means to access any compensation or recourse from that is quite difficult, because it then will depend upon the financial means of the person who's provided that service to them. And if they don't have the necessary means in which to compensate or, you know, to allow somebody to get any recourse from it, then there's not simply any avenue for the patient to go.
And Martin, if you want to make a complaint, I mean, this may sound like a very obvious question, but, you know, should you complain to the person who carried out the procedure, to, you know, the health sort of spa that you went to, the beauty salon or whatever, or the surgeon you went to, or the head office? How do you actually start that process?
So a good starting point is always to complain to the company that's listed on any documentation, any consent forms, as the one that person works for. If there isn't any company, then you might want to question, you know, what with, you know, facial necrosis and everything, whether you really want to go through that whole process anyway. So start initially through the clinic. If you're not sure if it's part of a wider one, you can go through a free company like Resolver that will track down the head office and put the complaints on your behalf. But it doesn't have to be as complicated. It's always worthwhile checking, though, who is actually in charge of the company, and also if they're based in the UK, because some of them may be based offshore.
And if you have paid by credit card, you haven't taken out a finance deal, and maybe you haven't paid from your savings, can you make a claim against your credit card for the service not being what you expected, as in, you know, there have been problems afterwards?
Well, you certainly can. And as we both know, it's by no means guaranteed. And you'll be pleased now, I'm not even going to attempt to explain the rules of how this works. But under the Consumer Credit Act, if you spent over £100 on a credit card in full or in part, then if your goods are misrepresented, then in theory you can make a complaint. Now, we saw a few of these cases after a recent French issue with breast implants, where the breast implants were found to be faulty and there was a clear case of negligence. Those cases were being looked at under the Consumer Credit Act, but before that decision, the businesses decided to pay out.
Well, thank you very much indeed. A huge thank you to my guests, to Uma Jayanathan, who's from Save Face, Judith Thomas-Whittingham, who's Head of Clinical Negligence at Stevenson Solicitors, Nilesh Sajitra, who's from the British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, and Martin James, who we just heard from there, who's an independent financial expert.